But just tell the people the story about Hey Joe.
Well, it's about a cat, you know, a guy. He shoots his old lady because he catch her doing wrong. You know, she's messed with everybody else.
This is WGXC 90.7, Accra, the Wave Farm Radio for Open Ears. This is the latest installment of Reading is Funkdemental. This is my monthly show. It's about books, about music. My name is Sal Cataldi. I'm a local musician with a band called Spaghetti Eastern Music and some others. And I also write about music for the New York Times and Pop Matters and some other pubs. Today, we're going to be talking all about the tune Hey Hey Joe. There's a great book written by Jason Snyder, which just came out. It's called That Gun in Your Hand, The Saga of Hey Joe and Popular Music's History of Violence. It's on Anvil Press. And it's all about the history of this song, Hey Joe, which is kind of the original rock and roll murder ballad. I'm sure you all know the version by Jimi Hendrix. It was actually written by a guy named Billy Roberts, an obscure kind of folk singer. It kind of got ripped off by another guy for a while in terms of the royalties and such, but it's been covered by Patti Smith and Ice-T and Charlotte Gainsbourg. It's an excellent book about an excellent song. So without any further ado, let's bring on Jason and talk about his book, That Gun in Your Hand.
Okay, here we are with Jason Snyder, who is the author of a fantastic book I just reviewed called That Gun in Your Hand, The Strange Saga of Hey Joe and Popular Music's History of Violence. Yes, indeed. So Jason, great to have you. Congratulations on the book. It's a fantastic look into one of the first songs that I and every guitarist of my generation learned. I think it was that and... what was the other one?
The House of the Rising Sun.
Exactly. Right? House of the Rising Sun and a little bit of I'm So Glad. I think that was two chords. So thanks for being with us. So tell me a little bit of, before we go into this particular book, tell me a little bit about yourself, your history of writing about music and some of the other books you've done and how you got into the subject.
Sure. Well, thanks, first of all, Sal, for enjoying the book. Yeah, I've been a music journalist in Canada since probably the early 90s, right after I got out of school. And my main gig was working at Canada's National Music Monthly, Exclaim magazine. Mm-hmm. And I've also written for many other magazines around the world and in the States, Pace, No Depression, Shindig, all kinds of stuff like that. So yeah, I've been doing this for about 30 years for sure. And the other books I've written have mainly been focused around Canadian music history. Mm-hmm. So this is really the first book I've done that I feel has an international audience. And mm-hmm. Thankfully it's been well received so far.
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, the reception has been great. I think we should start. Hey Joe, it has an interesting history. Obviously, there were a lot of covers, and your book deals not only with it sort of from a musical standpoint, in terms of the different genres of musicians who've tackled it, but also sort of the backstory of what those represent in terms of, like, when we get to talking about the Ice-T's version, it's really about the history of sort of violence in rap lyrics and how it represented. So let's start with kind of the whole background about this is a genre called a murder ballad. And so talk about that and some of the precursors to it, like Pretty Polly and Stackily and those things.
Yeah. It's Hey Joe itself is credited to a guy named Billy Roberts, who I'm sure we'll get into his life a little bit. But he was born in South Carolina in the 1930s and really absorbed a lot of the blues and country music from that area around that time. And a lot of those songs, dated back to the late 19th century. This idea of murder ballads was very popular, mainly because it kind of served the purpose of what, true crime podcasts do today, where people heard about these,
they were true stories.
I mean, they were true stories.
And what's the other one I'm trying to think of? Frankie and Johnny.
Frankie and Johnny, yeah. I mean, that was a big influence for sure. That became a kind of a standard in a lot of in pop music and jazz. But as you mentioned, songs like Stagger Lee, Pretty Polly, Little Sadie, these were all songs kind of rooted in these events that you know, sadly, I guess were pretty commonplace in rural America at that time, where I think, you know, law enforcement probably wasn't as diligent then as it is today. So artists would, you know, musicians, you know, piano players, mostly saloon piano players, they would kind of hear about these things and sort of make up these songs on the spot. And, you know, they would kind of get passed around between other musicians and soon found their way into, you know, early, you know, bluegrass, country music, blues, of course. That's, you know, a lot of this is the foundation for all of that music.
And then Roberts. So Roberts is, I just actually interviewed David Brown, who did a book on the history of Greenwich Village. So you know, Brown, Roberts was one of those guys. He made his way up to Greenwich Village, and he was there in the scene with, you know, actually a little prior to Dylan, I believe, like sort of around the Beatnik time.
Yeah, he arrived almost exactly 1 year before Dylan did, which right. I feel kind of makes the story, you know, really interesting, because there's this kind of full year pre-Dylan where, you know, things changed completely after Bob arrived.
So, right. Yeah. Well, then it was, you know, and this is some of the mistake with the authorship of the songs. Even Dylan, it was really, they would do traditional songs, or they would do Woody Guthrie songs, or, you know, original songwriting really kicked in with Dylan and really with his second album. So, yeah. So Billy comes up with this song, and he, you know, he plays it. He has a slight, it would morph lyrically as we'll talk about, but he doesn't strangely record it. So what was that all about? Except for
Yeah. Well, that was one of the fascinating things I learned, you know, doing the research and getting the chance to talk to people who were around at that time, that, yeah, in this, you know, pre-Dylan period, these singers were still trying to follow, you know, what was known as, you know, the oral folk tradition, where songs just kept getting passed back and forth. Nobody was concerned really about copyright. Mm-hmm. Nobody was concerned about recording, even, really. I mean, that was, you know, one of the best interviews I found was with the late Richie Havens, kind of talking mm-hmm. about this period. And he basically said, yeah, him and everyone else around that time thought making records was a hassle. So Billy was part of that mentality where, you know, if you're a troubadour, you know, your songs are kind of fair game, and that's how Hey Joe began spreading around.
But yeah, and then speaking of troubadour, you know, that gets us to the uniquely talented and uniquely kind of controversial Dino Valenti, Chet Powers. I don't know mm-hmm. how many names he had. So those two guys, obviously Dino Valenti got more well known for writing Get Together, which also kind of is strangely like Billy Roberts and his song. He wasn't the one who broke it, certainly. And then they traveled together. Tell you know, and then Dino's version is the one that really got sort of his live performance of it were what kind of popularized it. So if you want to go into that, their little history together.
Yeah. Well, from what I learned about Dino, he was a much more, I guess, you know, dynamic figure than Billy, you know, I guess as a performer. I mean, to bring up Richie Havens again, I mean, we all know, you know, the way Richie performed, very, very intense, you know, heavy strumming. And from what I've heard, you know, Dino kind of performed in a similar way. So, you know, he kind of left his mark on a lot of people more than Billy did. So, you know, in that early stage, yeah, a lot of people kind of associated Hey Joe with Dino, until a lot of this, you know, copyright stuff eventually got sorted out. But
before we get there, we'll talk about, so the song then became very popular. I don't know if it was, it, was if it was pre Hendrix's version or not with the LA crowd? And was that through like David Crosby seeing Dino in New York, or how did the song go out there? And
yeah,
then
it was.
It was a standard of all the LA bands. Love and
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it was through David Crosby. He was he was kind of just embarking on his career as a folk singer, and you know, doing the circuit, coming from LA to New York. And yeah, that's when he met Dino, and they became pretty close friends. I think, you know, from what even Crosby said, they had a lot of personality traits in common. So
yes.
Yeah, they became really close. And yeah, Crosby learned Hey Joe from Dino, took it back to LA, and it was just kind of one of these, you know, cases of perfect timing that, you know, Crosby was, you know, forming the Byrds with Roger, Jim McGuinn and Gene Clark. And Hey Joe was really Crosby's first contribution to the band's repertoire, and sort of became his signature song.
Right.
And very popular among their fans, obviously, which.
Right. Yeah. It was more of a stage staple. It did not get recorded by the Byrds until the third album, I guess.
That's correct. Yeah.
And then in the interim, you know, the Byrds very much through Brian McLean, who was a roadie for the Byrds or whatever. He's the one who kind of did it for the band Love. And then it became a hit for the Lees. But let's talk, go backtrack a little bit to the whole copywriting issue. So Billy, even though people weren't really thinking about this, how and when did he copyright it? And then obviously Dino, post fact, attempted to copyright it with his publishing deal with Third Story Music. So yes,
that's when things start to get complicated. So Billy Roberts left New York. I think it was sometime in 1962. He went down to Washington D.C. and became part of the folk scene there. And it was then that, you know, for whatever reason, he just decided one day he's got this song, Hey Joe, you know, maybe he should get it copyrighted. So being in D.C., he went over to the Library of Congress and filled out the paperwork. And, you know, thank goodness for him that he did, because that's, you know, that was really the easiest way for him to claim ownership of the song.
Right. And then Dino secures a deal with Third Story Music. I guess it was a publishing deal. And that was Herb Cohen, who was involved with Zappa and Odetta before that. And then he copyrights it in 66, is it? Or
It would have been a little before that. Kind of the backstory to that was, Dino eventually ended up going to California. David Crosby actually sent him an invitation. He said, you know, you should come out to LA. I'll help you get a record deal. We'll do some demos, which Dino did. Nothing really happened. So he headed north to San Francisco, where, you know, as you mentioned, his song Get Together was really kind of popularized at first. But Dino had other ideas. You know, he wanted to kind of form his own rock band, you know, following Crosby's example with the Byrds.
So that's busted.
Yeah. Yeah. So before he could kind of get that off the ground with the band that eventually became Quicksilver Messenger Service, Dino was arrested for drug possession. And he was looking at some pretty serious time in Folsom Prison. So to get himself out, he started, you know, trying to make any deal he could for his song publishing. And that's when he happened to, you know, connect with Third Story Music and said, I'm the guy who wrote Hey Joe, you know. So
Now Get Together, we didn't mention, is the, you know, the Youngbloods were the ones who popularized that. And he sold his rights to that to get money to stay out of jail. Is that the story, or?
Yeah, that's the story that I gathered that, you know,
I heard that other place too, yeah.
through the publishing, the publishing deals for Get Together and Hey Joe, he managed to raise enough money to hire a good lawyer and get himself out of prison. It was right before, you know, the Summer of Love, so sometime in 66.
And then the real conduit to the classic version, which is the Hendrix version, was a guy named Tim Rose. So let's
Right.
talk a little bit about what he did to the song musically. He did a little changes, and then he did some things lyrically that were significant. So.
Yeah, and that's when the story gets really crazy because, you know, it you know, there were there was the West Coast version of Hey Joe,
Right.
and then Tim Rose was on the East Coast and down in Miami specifically, where he heard the song done by a guy named Vince Martin, who was Fred Neil's partner briefly in New York. So Tim Rose heard Vince Martin sing Hey Joe. He'd never heard it before. He said, "Where'd you get that song?" And Vince Martin told him, "Well, I think it's just traditional, you know." So Tim Rose took the song, kind of slowed it down a bit, made it a little more bluesy, you know, gave it a little more menace. You know, the West Coast versions, as we know, they're much more upbeat and you know, rocking, I guess. But you know, Tim Rose kind of added this new darker element to it. And when he eventually signed a deal with Columbia, he recorded it in 1966. It was put out as a single, didn't really do anything, but that ended up being the version that Jimmy based his Hey Joe on.
Right. And he changed the first line. I think it's the first line was, "Hey Joe, where are you going with that money in your hand?" And then he changed it to, "Where are you going with that gun in your hand?"
That's right,
And
yeah.
I guess that little that little intro riff, I don't know if that was what Tim, there's like a little
Yeah.
around
Well,
it.
yeah. Well, yeah. It. Yeah. He put that in for sure, and that definitely.
Spoken as a guitar player.
Yes. Yeah. And that definitely inspired Jimmy to, put his stamp on it.
And then, Hendrix's story is, as everybody knows, he gets seen by ultimately by Chaz Chandler, and Chaz is going to launch his career with his cover of Hey Joe. When Chaz goes to see him, he actually plays it. So they both kind of, I guess, knew this song. And then that's what launches Hendrix's career.
Yeah, it's one of these, you know, just crazy serendipitous moments. And you know, well, the person who almost always gets left out of this story is this woman named Linda Keith,
Right.
who was a British model and Keith Richards' girlfriend at the time. And she was in New York while the Stones were on tour, and she had just, you know, encountered Jimmy playing in a club one night and instantly fell in love with him, as anybody would.
Right.
And you know, a little while later, she runs into Chaz Chandler, who tells her, yeah, he's about to leave the Animals. He wants to get into record production and management. And he wants someone to record this song called by Tim Rose called Hey Joe.
Right.
And so Linda Keith tells him, "Well, have I got a guy for you?" So this all comes together kind of really quickly during the summer of 1966.
Right.
And by the fall, Jimmy's in England in a recording studio.
Great. Now, and then, obviously Jimmy's version, it was that's when it becomes heavily copied. The British acts that copied it, well, some put in it, that I actually really like the Deep Purple version, because that's an interesting, it's kind of a flamenco, a bolero version.
Yeah.
Very interesting intro. It's a long song too. What were some of the other contemporary sort of covers at that time before we get a little further now?
Right. Well, of course, when Jimmy hit England, he was like an atomic bomb. Like
Right.
everyone in the music scene there just, couldn't, he couldn't be ignored. So, Hey Joe was his first single. So that was the song that everyone heard first. So, if you wanted to be like Jimmy, that was the song that you had to do. So it kind of started with, well, in Britain, there was the band the Creation. They were
Right.
the first British band to cover it.
Oh,
And
really?
then,
And no bow, right? I was listening to that version. The guy Eddie Phillips is, we know the Eddie Phillips story. He's the guy who used to play the guitar with the violin bow,
that's right.
which Jimmy Page kind of purloined. They were the great thieves. That led, very successful.
Well,
Very.
no, it's well, just bringing up that point, again, in England, the music business, the rules or the, everything was pretty lax. So again, you had the spirit of people borrowing from each other without any real, concern about copyright or anything. So even those early covers, they were either credited to, traditional arrangement Hendrix or in some cases the Dino Valenti.
Right.
So yeah, so it's really interesting. But yeah, I mean, yeah, as you mentioned, Deep Purple covered it. Robert Plant's pre Led Zeppelin
Oh,
band,
yeah.
the Band of Joy, they did it. I mean, yeah, I don't know if the Who did it at that time, but they would later cover it,
Wow.
it's so I mean all the British bands at that time, knew the song.
Easier than Wild Thing, right?
Easier than Wild Thing,
So, and
yeah.
there was some fantastic, I mean, there's some fantastic, one of the, I love, reading books like yours and, benefiting from your research, discovering some of the things that I never heard about, such as the Lee, the Wilson Pickett version, which I think I had heard, but the Lee Moses version is incredible.
Yes.
Tell us about a little bit about him. I actually think I stated in my print review that it had not been released at that time, but it was, right, in the 71 with
But it was on it was on a very
Michael.
small label, so it really got no distribution at the time. But yeah, I was someone actually turned me on to Lee Moses's version maybe about 10 years ago when his album Time and Place got reissued. And yeah, from the first time I heard his Hey Joe, it blew my mind. It's well, the way he did it was, he kind of put himself in the story
Right.
and Joe's friend, so he's there kind of like watching this all go down, and he's kind of, he kind of feels powerless to do anything about it. So there's this great, he opens the song with this great recitation, and
Yeah.
by the end of it, you feel like you're looking at a crime scene. And yeah, it's an incredible
And then
version.
another great version is a version that was really, I don't want to call it a parody, I don't know what you would call it, sort of an editorial on hippies. It was Zappa's version, which was Hey Pop, which was from We're Only In It for the Money, I believe.
I think the song was actually Flower Punk. That was
Flower
the
Punk, right.
But that was, I mean, that was Zappa again, being Zappa and just kind of, taking the piss out of the flower children, and using Hey Joe as sort of the vehicle for it, just because it was, I mean, that was a song that obviously, with all the LA versions, I'm sure Frank had a lot of disdain for, even though he loved
Yeah,
Jimmy
he did. They had a.
himself. But I think just, the amount of LA groups playing the song probably,
Well,
left
speaking
shaking his
of
head.
recitations and flipping the meaning, there's the Patti Smith version, which was
Right.
actually the B side of her first single, if you want to tell us a little bit about that. And Patti Smith, it really was about discuss the story of Patty Hearst, correct?
Yes. Well, that's when I kind of get into the second half of the book. The first half is really, you know, telling the story of the song from, you know, the Murder Ballad or origins up until Jimmy's version. And then the second half is kind of discussing, you know, different versions of it in specific genres. And yeah, Patty's version is another one that's just, you know, you have to hear it to believe it. You know, well, first of all, she wanted to do it as a tribute to Jimmy. She had, she had brief encounters with him while he was still alive. And then, you know, as she was kind of transitioning from being a poet into being a, you know, a songwriter, her and her collaborator, Lenny Kaye, they were trying to figure out ways to kind of, you know, make, you know, turn her words in into songs. And to do that, they use, you know, classic songs like Hey Joe as sort of the foundation for that. So when she, you know, went into the recording studio, they recorded it at Jimmy's studio, Electric Lady. And at that time in 1974, the big story in the news was the Patty Hearst kidnapping. So you know, whether it was just, you know, Patty, you know, because they shared a similar name, or
right,
or they kind of related to each other on a sort of, you know, similar level. You know, Patty Smith kind of took Patty Hearst's story and combined it with Hey Joe as this kind of commentary on, you know, I guess at that time would have been the, you know, the idea of women in America being oppressed and having to kind of rise up in their own way. So,
and being on the run.
And being on the run, yeah.
Yeah, and another great version, which I had, you know, listened to prior, you know, prior to your book, is the version by Charlotte Gainsbourg from the, which was, you know, a totally different, very, as like a lot of her stuff, very eerily slow and mysteriously synthetic, you know, synthetic version, which was done for the movie Nymphomaniac with Beck, correct?
That's right. That actually comes near the end of the book, but yeah, what's fascinating with Charlotte's version is, I mean, it kind of had to go with the plot of the movie, but you know, it really kind of turns the song on its head, where it's a woman, you know, holding the gun and kind of committing the murder. And yeah, I really kind of wanted to put that in into the context of, you know, this notion of female revenge fantasy, which you know, kind of came along in the last decade or so with a lot of other media. And you know, her version of Hey Joe really kind of fitted perfectly into that.
And then there were, you know, the sort of more of the these pre earlier, but the Guitar God versions, you know, some great players. Roy Buchanan did two wonderful versions of it, a live version and a studio version, and Randy California, who was a you could tell us a little bit about him and Jimmy and their experiences.
Randy California, the band Spirit, he actually met Jimmy in Greenwich Village when he was a teenager. And and Jimmy invited him to play with him in his Greenwich Village band, Jimmy James and the Blue Flames, they were called at the time. So yeah, I mean, that's like, to me, that could be a movie in itself. Just
right.
this high school kid who you know meets Jimi Hendrix and goes on to his own career as a guitar god, but. You know, obviously, you know, people who know the story know that, you know, Randy went through a lot of tough times. But, you know, kind of maintaining that connection, that spiritual connection to Jimmy always,
And
kind of
a very and a very Hendrixy version
yeah.
of it. He also the name California, Hendrix is the name who I believe Hendrix gave him the California.
That's right. Because there were two guys named Randy in the
Right,
Randy
you
Rose
want
band. So yeah, so Jimmy named him California because he was from California.
And then I really liked the section on sort of the history of rap and sort of how the you know sort of the lyrics of violence and guns were, you know were introduced into rap music with the Message and you know the NWA and then you have this version by Ice-T. So if you tell us a little bit about that section of the book, which is near the end of it.
Well, that was a really interesting chapter to write for sure. Because yeah, that well that I sort of drew from some of my early encounters with rap, but even going further back into reggae, being growing up near Toronto, there was always huge Jamaican population
Right.
in Toronto. So I grew up listening to a lot of reggae and always loved it. And there's of course people who know there's a lot of violence in reggae music. Despite all the claims of
But
Rastafari and
all
peace.
that weed, you know,
Yeah,
all
yeah,
that,
yeah.
it's mind-boggling. But there is,
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned that because there's a great version by Black Uhuru, right?
That's right.
In cities.
Yeah. So I kind of started there, and then that led into early hip hop. But Ice-T was really, he was there, one of the founders of LA rap. And he became famous first, well, to me anyway, with the song from the soundtrack to the film Colors. And yeah, it the whole evolution of, I guess, what became gangster rap was based
Right,
on.
and you mentioned that you know he you know before he became you know detective on whatever New York I forget
And
the
Law and Order, yeah.
owner, he you know as a youngster like a lot of people he was into Black Sabbath he was into Led Zeppelin and then that you know he was one of the first guys to sort of merge both with the band Body Count both genres. So let's end this with a little bit of you kind of have a nice epilogue about the life that Roberts led after this. So he had a kind of interesting sort of life, kind of wandered and did various things, you know, played on cruise ships and you know.
Well, yeah, he did end up having a pretty interesting life. I mean, like once you know one once he finally got all the publishing rights, well, not all the publishing rights to Hey Joe,
Right.
he had to split it 50-50,
With the
which is
people who robbed him.
well, and that's and that that's I was told the primary reason why he never recorded Hey Joe himself was because he wanted to. He didn't want to give any more royalties to Third Story Music,
Wow.
so he always kept it to himself. But he did end up living a fairly comfortable life in San Francisco. But I and in his heart, it just seems like he just wanted to stay a troubadour and just play his music to whoever would listen. So he would. He would busk if the mood struck him, and as you said, he get jobs on cruise ships, see the world. He would travel. He would just travel around America. He would head back east a lot to see his mother, and and that's where I mean, I don't want to give away the ending, but
Yeah, you
he
don't
ended
have to.
up well yeah well he ended up getting into a very serious car accident
Yeah.
in Northern California, which kind of incapacitated him for the rest of his life.
But
But
he did he do did he do okay financially from it, or are you aware of, you know, I mean, did he collected, you know, some of his royalties?
By all accounts, I think he was fine, and people in San Francisco, I think he was just kind of like one of the scene guys there for, during the 70s and 80s. Like if you went out to a bar, you might see him there, and he'd get up on stage and play a few songs, and it's like, oh, that's the guy who wrote Hey Joe.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, he wrote Hey Joe. Well, tell people again about the book and, where they can get it, who the publisher is, that kind of thing.
It's published by Anvil Press, which is based in Vancouver. People can order it there, but they also have US distribution through a company called Asterism, which is a
Right.
really great distributor of independent publishers in the US. So I encourage people to find it there. And people have asked me whether I would, create a playlist or anything like that, and I haven't gotten to that point yet. I've thought about it, but the question comes up. It's like, does anybody really want to hear 50 versions of Hey
Well,
Joe?
I did in the print story that I did, I found a playlist which had many of these songs, which I just tagged to it. I didn't know I didn't see that you did it, but I just, that we kind of like to have that. And then I did find a few videos. I think that we put a clip of his 1961 version, his home recording.
He did make a yeah, he did make a demo of it.
Pretty great quality for a demo. And all right, so well, thank you, Jason. And the book is That Gun in Your Hand, The Strange Saga of Hey Joe and Popular Music's History of Violence, which continues. Well, thanks for
Yes.
having us, and we'll talk to you. What's next? Any ideas? You have anything cooking, music, book-wise, which you can talk about or
Yeah.
learn?
I mean, I dabble in fiction as well.
Oh,
So
okay.
yeah, I think I'm gonna shift gears to that
Yeah, less
for
research.
the next thing. Less research, definitely.
Exactly. All right, thank you.
All right,
Yeah.
thanks, Sal.
Well, I said, hey, Joe, Honey, the way you play guitar makes me feel so masochistic. The way you go down low deep into the neck, and I would do anything, and I would do anything. And Patty Hearst, you standing there in front of the Symbionese Liberation Army flag with your legs spread. I was wondering, were you getting it every night from a black revolutionary man and his women, or were you really dead? And now that you are on the run, what goes on in your mind? Your sister, they sit by the window. No, your mama does a sit and cry. And your daddy, well, you know what your daddy said, Patty. You know what your daddy said, Patty? He said, oh, 60 days ago, she was such a lovely child. Now here she is with a gun in her hand.
Where you going with that? Song to a smoke chronic in my memory.
Why me, man?
Hey Joe, come on, man.